Welcome to the Creating the Future podcast. I'm your host, Jordan Krause. In this episode, we're going to talk about celebrating the process of art, making art, here with Lindsay Kowalski, our K-5 art teacher. Lindsay, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. Thank you. How are you?
I'm awesome. Thanks for coming on here today. So your first year at TCDS here. How's it going?
It's going very well. I am having a lot of fun and I'm meeting some great people, and it's turned into something far more exciting than I expected it to be.
Elaborate. What's exciting about it? What do you enjoy on a day-to-day, week-to-week? You're almost halfway through the first year. So like, yeah, what have you discovered kind of brings you joy every day, every week?
First and foremost, the kids and the random, I really like your whatever, the random things they come up with that I can't think of in the moment. But I really like your shoes today, or I really like the sleeves on your shirt. And you can see sometimes they're just kind of making something up. But just the like random sweetness that you just don't, outside of a school setting, you don't get that. Nobody comes up to you and tells you that they think your lips are pretty today. It's very sweet. Those little fills my cup.
Just being around kids. They're lovely. I do have to say, Lindsay, your room, amazing. Think back to the summer when you're getting kind of moved in, put a sink in there. You've done such a wonderful job at making that space just beautiful and comfortable. So I have to say that being in your first year, you've really established your environment as one that I think kids look forward to being in and know like, ooh, it kind of exudes like the artistic juices, and I feel like would prompt kids to want to have fun and get to work in your space. So that's awesome.
Awesome. Thank you. I hope that it does. I hope they come in and feel comfortable, and there's lots of little things all around the room. Mm-hmm. Hopefully it's not overwhelming with things everywhere, but there's little butterflies on the ceiling or.
Well, I can say as a parent of two elementary kids who have your class, they love it. Okay. They love going to art. So things seem like they're rocking and rolling. So let's talk about some of the skills that you help build in a K-5 art setting. You know, one of our goals as part of our mission here at the school is to, give kids relevant transferable skills, right? We don't want to go like just play school, right? We've got a scripted curriculum. We just kind of feed kids. They spit it back on like in a test and like, that's it. We want them to build relevant transferable skills, whether that's in art and music, Spanish. So talk about the type of skills that you help build in the K-5 art setting. And then how do you see those skills transferring outside of say like an art classroom?
Well, one thing that we're working on right now today, just as I left the class, first graders were sharing, they finished their most recent projects, and first they turned to the person at their table and shared, then the other person asked questions and gave compliments and then swapped. Then students were chosen at random to come up and present to the whole class. And there was one student that stood up there and spoke very quietly. We couldn't hear anything he said. And I said, you know, honey, speak up a little bit. He said, I can't, I'm just too shy. And he said it very loud for everyone to hear. And it was very sweet. But so facing challenges, we had a friend hold his paper so that he could talk about it and share with the class, having someone up there to help build his confidence. But just give him that little extra boost to do something that made him step out of his comfort zone, which, by the way, he volunteered to share with the class. So he wanted to. It wasn't like he was being forced, but
just needed the experience to grow in that confidence. Yeah. That's cool.
So stepping outside of your comfort zone today, a few students experienced that. The last project we worked on, we did an extra step of critique where you had at least one person give you a critique. And we talked about what that meant, and not that it was supposed to hurt feelings, but maybe offer suggestions or, you know, tell them something that you liked perhaps, but then also, you know, give them an opportunity to maybe make some changes and offer suggestions. They didn't have to do any of that, but accepting that critique, hearing from somebody that in a kind and positive and supportive way that it's not just, oh, I really like that you did red. Done. Moving on. Mm-hmm. And they got to hear some critique in a positive way, which is something that even as adults, I myself struggle with that, hearing people tell me a better way to do something than what I did. Mm-hmm. It's hard to hear that. So learning that when you're young can go a long way.
How are you seeing kids speaking to the critique? I think that's so great because to your point, even as adults, like it can be hard to receive constructive feedback mm-hmm. or to give it, right? So how yeah. are you noticing students grow into that skill?
Ooh, well, time will tell for sure.
For sure, absolutely.
In this project, we didn't do that step of critique before presenting, but turning to partners, I wonder, and as we go throughout the rest of the week with these, that was first graders that are doing this, I'm going to definitely have an ear out for listening to see if anyone just includes that critique as part of their sharing and asking questions. Mm. But hopefully, I really like your point of being able to offer critique, because that is also something that's uncomfortable as an adult that we don't think about. Practicing a skill of offering somebody critique. We think it in our heads, but then keep it to ourselves, when really it would be beneficial to share. Maybe your idea combined with their ideas would make a better idea in the end.
Yeah. Not only does that help them within the context of their, say, art project, but that's important for relationship skills.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, learning how to collaborate and hold a friendship and, you know, be a better classmate, sibling, you know. So yeah, that I see clear opportunities for that skill to transfer.
I like that you mentioned collaboration. We're doing a few different grade levels are doing collaborative projects right now, and I expected a whole lot more of work on my behalf to make sure that this collaboration worked well. And they're collaborating. Fifth grade is making books, and so they're collaborating as a class, each individual fifth grade class, but then they're also collaborating in small groups to get individual pages done. And seeing how positive and the whole experience has been so easy for me, I feel like these kids are, they're already set up for success, but a lot of positive comments. I can think of at least a couple groups that you can see the pause that they take instead of just blurting out, that's dumb. No, we're not doing that. Mm. But that pause to, well, what if, and coming up with a thoughtful response to somebody's idea that maybe you didn't particularly like, or, just making it a safe environment to give those ideas, whether it's a good one that the group, you know, really grasps onto, or something that, you know, maybe let's keep brainstorming here. Mm. But the collaboration, I give big kudos to those fifth graders. They're doing a great job right now.
Nice. So collaboration, critique, and being able to kind of face challenges, those are very kind of process oriented, mm-hmm. right? So how do you balance emphasizing the importance of the process of learning and growing and doing with, I think, most students want to produce like cool stuff, things that they're proud of. So like a final product. So how do you balance that valuing process versus product?
So this, I think if they're interested in doing something, I have the benefit that many other subjects don't have, that if they're interested in doing something, I can extend it out as long as we want, as opposed to we need to get to the next standard, or we need to finish these fractions so that we can move on to this next thing that builds on that. In the art room, I can pull standards from, I can pull just about any standard and apply it to whatever project we're working on. So the longer we're working on something, if they're enjoying it, I can, you know, pull lots of different things in. But if they're enjoying the process, and I think they are adding more, and, oh, I had this other idea that they didn't even have in the beginning, and it just builds more and more and makes more and more connections within themselves, then in the end, they're going to be proud of their end product, whatever it is. With the upcoming student showcase, and I've kind of put it on the kids, do you want to really buckle down and finish this project we're working on. So it's ready to share with the families and the guests that come in for Student Showcase, or do we want to just keep working and so that we can realize our vision in the end? And some classes are deciding to buckle down and finish so that they can share with families. And some have decided, no, we want to keep doing this. We won't be able to finish it in the next couple classes. We really want to realize our vision and keep working. And that's interesting to see how there was, a fifth grade class that last week that was about divided 50-50 of who wanted to buckle down and finish and who wanted to extend the project until they were finished. And today they decided, I think it was down, there was maybe two that wanted to continue and realize the vision. And the rest thought over the week, thought about it and decided, no, we can do this. And the progress that they made today was really, really awesome. And they were very proud of it. And look, we can do this. And trying to encourage those two kind of holdouts that wanted to extend it, that look, we can do this. Look, you're doing a great job. That was really cool. So enjoying the process doesn't necessarily mean we have to extend it out and go on and on and on.
Because the process will be different for every group, right? Every class, different grade levels. I'm sure you see that process play out differently. Say if there's three cohorts of fourth graders, mm-hmm. you know, you might see a very different path that each class takes, and that should be valued, right?
Yeah.
Important. So inspiration, I think, as an artist, you're always looking for different forms of inspiration and things that empower you to want to pursue something. How do you use different authors, different artists to help inspire your students to want to know more and to be curious? I know Eric Carle in particular, famous author, The Very Hungry Caterpillar. I'm sure everyone listening has probably got that book in their home. Talk to us about how you use, like I said, artists, books, stories that people are familiar with to inspire future art.
The two were kind of closing out the end of Eric Carle. Before Eric Carle, we worked on Henri Matisse, who as a young man, he quit. He went to law school and that was his future. And he's going to be a lawyer, and got sick, and his mom gave him some paints and he started painting, and he said, forget law school. I can only imagine what his mom thought. And he moved to Paris to become an artist. And he was painting just like everyone else was painting, and he was doing a good job and he was being successful. And then he decided, I want to paint this picture completely different than anyone is doing. And he painted a portrait of his wife and put, it was a yellow spot on her nose and green on her forehead and red on her cheek. And it was all crazy colors all over the place. And he loved it. And he put it, along with a few other pieces on display, and the critics were just appalled. And they called him Le Faux, which is wild beast. But people liked it. And more people liked it, and more people liked it, and started to do that same style. And it became a whole movement, the Fauvist movement. But he didn't care what everyone else said. The critics, talking about critique, said something that he, you know, basically said he didn't do a good job. But he did it anyway. He didn't care what they thought. And it's a style of art that's still very, very popular today. And because he did what he loved, he was happy. And just because one critic said it wasn't good. So we did some Matisse collages when he was much older. He got sick and was bedridden and couldn't paint anymore like he did. And so he eventually figured out that he could trade in his paintbrush for a pair of scissors. And he just started cutting. And then he made these giant collages. And so we made collages because of his perseverance. Whenever faced with a challenge, he didn't back down. He you know, maybe made a pivot like you did with the scissors and moved on. And I hope that the kids get that. And we have talked a lot about perseverance and overcoming challenges when we were learning about Matisse and doing the collages. And the kids just loved cutting up those little bits of paper. And so with Eric Carle, well, he didn't have the big challenges. He did have some critique. When he first started, he was an illustrator for another artist that came to him and said, hey, I want you to make these cool pictures that you make as a graphic designer for the New York Times, making antihistamine ads. I want you to be an artist for my children's book. And so Eric Carle's first project was collaboration, which we learn is important. Mm-hmm. The two of them collaborated on Brown Bear, Brown Bear, What Do You See? And he thought, this is really cool. I want to do this myself. And he made a book. And as he was cutting, hole punching papers and flipping a paper back and punching it again, flipping a page back, punching it again, he came up with this idea of a worm eating through the pages of a book. And he did the whole process, came up with this amazing book that he loved, brought it to his editor, who said, I don't think so. He's like, but no, we must make this book. And so together, again, they collaborated and brainstormed different animals, what could be doing this to the book, what would really resonate with kids. And when the editor said, what about a caterpillar? He thought, butterfly. And then instead of having this big gluttonous worm at the end of this book, he'd have a butterfly at the end of the book. And so he went home and rewrote the book. And I want to say it was like one day, maybe 2 days, and went back to his editor and it was done. And they published it. And when it was time for him to print the book, there wasn't a printer in the US that would print a book with different size pages and holes cut through, but cut through some of them and not other ones. And
because when was that printed?
That was in, let's see, 1949.
Okay, it's kind of mid-century.
Yep.
Long time ago.
In 2019. Oh, 69. That's when it was. 2019 was the 50th anniversary. Hmm. So yes, after World War II had ended, he went and found a printer who could print it just the way he wanted, even though that in the 1960s was not an easy thing to do. Not like we have the internet today and communication as it is.
I think it's really neat that kids hear this backstory, right? I think stories inspire to a large degree, right? It's one thing if kids just kind of see a style of art and they try to copy it or mimic it. I think it adds a lot of value when there's kind of a person and a story and kind of hearing struggles and like that artist's process of creating what is now something that is known, you know, worldwide that we're actually studying in our class. Something that's really cool that you use stories to help inspire. What would you say is a goal of yours as an art teacher of young students, you know, 5 years old to kind of 11, like if you could kind of distill their experience down into like one big overarching goal, like what would that be for your students? What do you want them to take away from your class, your classes?
I hope that they find some aspect of art that they really enjoy doing that can be an outlet for them when maybe with their, you know, stressed or have anxiety about something, finding something to do to just kind of bring like the calm, finding your inner calm. Most artists or hobbyists of any kind, and this goes back into enjoying the process as opposed to the product in the end. Most artists have a closet full. If you're a painter, you have a closet full of painted pieces of canvas. Maybe you've painted on them many, many times and they're getting thick with paint because they enjoy the process. If somebody crochets, I enjoy crocheting hats. Hats is my go-to. I just enjoy the process of crocheting. And for me, I can, any vacation we go on, I have, my stress level on vacations is generally high. I can find a craft store with yarn and buy a crochet hook in pretty much any town across America. And I can crochet, and you can look at the end of the trip and how many hats that I come home with or drop off at the Salvation Army on the way to the airport. Kind of tells you maybe how stressful that trip was. So for me, it isn't about, oh, I need to make a whole bunch of hats for this trip. It's, this is an outlet for me. I also love to macrame. I have all these pieces. If you need some macrame, you just let me know.
Mm-hmm. Noted.
Doing something, creating something with my hands, having that that work to do with my hands and the repetitive motion of whether it's painting or gardening. If you look at people who love to garden, they have extra vegetables and they're going to bring you their tomatoes. They didn't garden because they needed all those tomatoes. They gardened because they enjoyed it. Mm-hmm. They enjoyed the process. And pretty much any hobbyist, whether it's, you know, art or some other hobby, they do it for the sake of doing it. And whatever that brings them, if it brings them, you know, excitement or some sort of joy or calm, whatever it is they're looking for, I'm hoping that in this process that they find that. And along the way, hopefully we improve our fine motor skills in using scissors and pencils and learning the difference in how to take care of a paintbrush versus, you know, just jamming it in the bottom and getting a whole bunch of, you know, splayed out the brushes, the bristles in the brush or whatever. All of those things are kind of a byproduct of let's find something we enjoy, but in the process.
I love that. I think what makes the valuing the process so important is that it builds kind of intrinsic motivation, right? You don't go through that process for anyone else but yourself. Mm-hmm. And I feel like a lot of school is doing things for others, for my teacher. I want them to be happy and proud. And that's good, right? We want people that we admire and love to be proud of us, right? But that's typically comes from like a product centered kind of approach, right? Like the mm-hmm. product being a good grade so my parents are happy, or so I get that 10 bucks from my grandpa or whatever. But the process is individualized, right? It's your own. And I think that's what's really great that you're emphasizing. You want them to take away a love of doing this thing, right? And that's not done for anyone but them. And hopefully that's something they transfer and carry with them in their development through school and through life. So that's wonderful.
Yes. If this process helps them build some intrinsic motivation as opposed to looking for that external motivator, fantastic. That would make my year.
Nice. Lindsay, I really appreciate you coming on, talking about the process of art. Thanks for taking the time today.
All right. Thank you for having me.